And welcome everyone to another Smart Money Circle show. I'm Adam Sarhan. With me today are two special folks. We've got Jack and Antoine, who are, Antoine's the founder of Financial Modeling Prep, and Jack is currently the CEO and Chief Data Architect over at FMP. They have a very special mission, which is make financial data available for everyone. Gentlemen, welcome to the Smart Money Circle. I'm very excited and interested in what you do and today's conversation.
Awesome. It's nice to meet you. Yeah, Adam, any questions you have? We're an open book. We currently run Financial Modeling Prep. Antoine's been doing it for close to 7 years now. I've come over on board about 3 years ago. And yeah, we've been just scaling and growing all of our offerings and what the financial data world has to offer.
I love it. So Antoine, let's start with you. You got started with FMP. Can you go back to your history? I know that you started with some cash, discounted cash flow analysis, but speak to how you got this going, please.
Yeah, so basically it goes back to university. So I was in Canada. I did first bachelor, then master, and then my PhD. And during my PhD, I was in finance and I did DCF. It was for Barrick Gold at that time at $39, I remember. Yeah. And when I did my thesis was to describe how DCF, so basically how each assumption can impact the like DCF, making like almost a subjective valuation. So how basically it's really complex to model because each modeling really depends on the analyst and their view of the market. So from that on, I wanted to really automate everything, because just to explain, by that time I was doing this in like Excel, and I needed to activate like the F9 function, which make it everything manual, because otherwise that was circular reference and it took like 15 minutes to like just calculate everything. So my goal was primarily created DCF automated, but with a possibility of custom input.
Okay.
So this is where I started to code the website, and this is how it all started. So this is why it's Financial Modeling Prep, because at the beginning it was really targeting the modeling aspect of finance, and from then. Actually, a lot of people came and it switched to developer, because we can see a switch like since like maybe 10 years, most of finance people just switch to like coding, especially Python, to be able to automate, because it takes a lot of time and effort to basically create a DCF or a valuation or something when you more or less know the input and you can. If you have a good data source, you can create the basis. Then you can, of course, improve it. But yeah, so that's how it started.
I love it. So DCF is discounted cash flow modeling. Yeah. And you wanted to just go out there and say, hey, listen, how do we automate this and make this more, I guess, easier? And then you realize that the data itself was not clean and was a problem.
Yeah.
So that's when you dug in deep and helped yourself find better data. And then you realize it wasn't just you, other people could benefit from it. And that's how you started FMP. Is that correct?
Exactly. Exactly. And what you said is, it's really right, because actually, when I was doing modeling at the university, I was using a research paper. So all the banks has like research department, and they like release those big PDF with all those numbers, because in the DCF, you have to project the revenue, you have to project numbers in few years, and just to get the value, what is the company worth now, like today. And basically getting this data was first really costly and not really accurate, because the time that the report, so for example, it was from 2009, and then basically industry change, etc. So that was kind of complex. So this is where I started to look at the SEC and see that we can actually get the original statement. And from that, I can extract the data. And then, you know, everything started, and I wanted this clean data set. And this is exactly what you said. So from that, I understand that even before starting doing DCF, we need clean data, we need income statement, we need balance sheet. So my focus was on data, and then, you know, everything switched from there. And actually our user that was creating DCF wanted also access the data. So this is why FMP started from like a website and then triggered to a data provider. And yeah, it switched from that way.
I love it. So as the business grew, now you passed it over. And Jack, you've come on board. So can you let us know, Jack, a little about your background and what you do now with FMP, please?
Yeah, so my background relates mainly, I started off as a management consultant. So I did a lot of system architecture designs, analyzing big data, data visualization, machine learning. And then a little while forward, me and a friend, or actually a colleague at that point, we started a company called Eutradia. It was meant to bridge the gap between supply and demand for financial data, mainly from a B2C perspective. We noticed that there was a big question. You have all these people who wanted to get into investing, who wanted to trade, and especially during the height of 2020, 2021, where there's the pandemic, everyone started trading. But how come a platform like LinkedIn for investing doesn't exist? And so we wanted to kind of solve that question, but also take it from a more pragmatic approach. Rather than looking at it like, okay, let's just build another service. Why doesn't it exist? There's people with a lot of money. There's people with a lot of networks. They could have spun something up. And it turns out the biggest reason is that you have a lot of demand, but you have very, very little supply. So think of like Uber or Airbnb. In order to do something like that, you need to have an equal balance of supply and demand. There was a lot of people who wanted to consume financial data, but very few people who could provide analyses, provide news, and provide an understanding. So then we veered into the AI rendition. We noticed that people learned about Tesla buying Twitter or Elon Musk buying Twitter. We learned about all these market events through news, through pieces of information where you could take complex concepts and decipher it in kind of layman's terms. So in order to balance the gap between supply and demand, we built this AI before ChatGPT to basically do that. And it's still relevant and still applicable today because ChatGPT relies on historical information and regurgitation. Ours does more inference and takes information and stitches it together and basically explains it to you like a financial advisor. How I got involved with FMP was basically FMP was our data provider. So we worked with them for a while, and then we started doing social sentiment. Large-scale social sentiment. That's something that Antoine reached out and was like, hey, our social sentiment provider currently isn't the best. Do you mind if we do a deal where we can provide social sentiment? In exchange, we would get their financial data waived, essentially. Right. And as that relationship kind of moved forward, what ended up happening was that the system or FMP was scaling quite fast, but the amount of cost for data transfer is quite large as well. So the costs were creeping up quite quickly. And so Anton was deciding, okay, it's getting too big. It's kind of quite overwhelming. So he invited me on a random call one day, just invited me down to Spain. And I went down to Spain to go visit him. We had a few coffee chats. And yeah, it just went from there. We found out that a lot of the systems were very similar. We found out we had a lot of technologies from what we've built that can be leveraged. And so we took over FMP, scaled the database, reduced costs by about 80%. Just to give an idea of how why financial data is really expensive, and there's a lot of licensing fees, but also just the pure data processing. So we could do close to about 15 to 20 terabytes a day. And that's a significant amount of data if you're paying for servers all around the world for upkeep, SLA. So how do you scale that effectively in a very concise manner, but also not driving up your costs so that people can afford financial data? So that's how I got involved, and that's where we are today.
You know, I love these kind of stories. Hats off to you gentlemen here. Let me get my hat and take it off to you guys, because I love success stories. To me, it makes me happy that I see relationships come together like that, and they're organic and they're natural, and it happens. It wasn't premeditated where it was 1 + 1 = 2. It just, you know, 1 + 1 = 5 or equals 10. You never know how things grow. So I love those. My best relationships have been something similar to that. So I love that story. Let's talk about the data and what you guys do to clean it, keep it clean without revealing anything proprietary. But can you explain to folks watching the importance of getting clean data versus messy data?
Yeah, so there's two parts to it. One is extraction and one is standardization. So extraction is particularly difficult because you have a number of different file format types. Companies that are based in the US will report through the SEC, and they have some sort of standard, which is a little bit to go off of. When you go into more international, you can have reports in PowerPoint slides. You can have reports. Sometimes it's just a call. Sometimes it's just an email. So data extraction is particularly difficult because in some cases it's even presented in a graph, in a picture, there's no text to extract. So you have to come up with all these different types of methodologies to be able to handle pretty much every single type of data that comes in. The second part is standardization. Standardization is difficult because there's so many different categories. When you report revenue, you can have many different types of top line revenue. Depending on your share structure, you can also have different types of EPS. Except right. If you want to provide financial data, you need to have one consistent type. One biggest factor right now is, or difference is banks. Banks don't report revenue the same way everyone else does. And so their statements are going to look very, very different. So standardization is a major component, even just working within the SEC, where most things are laid out quite clearly. There's a lot of factor and rework. For a lot of companies that we see issues with, they'll report five or six different types of income statements. I know Visa, for example, they'll have different types of EPS. So which one do you actually share? There's different warrants that are attached to it that can affect the diluted number of shares and the market cap. So all these nuances is what makes financial data quite difficult per se. And so this pipeline, what we've effectively done is that we've built systems in place that automate most of the work, but then the work that can't be automated that needs to do, that you need research for, we have a team of analysts around the world. What they do is they kind of explain every week what they do in terms of how to analyze statements, how to get the right answer. And we build them the tools so that they can accelerate it. So if they're analyzing 5 to 10 statements per week, how can we bring that up to 10? Can we bring that up to 20 for next week? So it's a lot of optimization, a lot of improvement, but really it's just increasing the workforce, and there's no better way to do it, or there's no easier way to do it, because it just doesn't come in any easier format.
Yeah, that's a great point. So I know EPS, there's GAAP, non-GAAP, and lots of different ways of reporting earnings, because in the most simplest form, it's revenue minus expenses, and then you've got earnings. But we're not in a simple world. Things are very complex. So you said top line revenue data can be reported differently and banks report it differently. So can you explain to us different ways that revenue can be reported, just as an example, so you know the listeners can understand as far as what you're talking about?
Yeah. So for example, banks, I need to get into it in specifics, but banks earn most of their interest through, most of their revenue through interest. So as your income statement flows, you have your top line revenue, but it can be denoted in a different term, where it can be denoted as interest income. And so it's not always going to be, here's your total revenue. They'll have revenue broken down into certain aspects. Sometimes you would sum them all up. Sometimes you would just take the revenue that's given. But you would really need to read the entire statement in order to understand what's going on, to figure out which value is actually the revenue and place into a standardized format. So it's very different. It differs company by company, but sector-wise, there are some major differences. But company by company, there's also a lot of major differences as well.
I love that. Thank you for that clarification. So as far as the data, let's talk about all the fun things you guys offer, because I know you have a lot of fun things. So please go through it and let people know some of the good stuff they can get from using FMP.
Yes. Only like if I can add something,
please.
For the SEC, something really interesting is in 2020 and 2001, they introduced HTM. So before it was all text, then it was HTM, and in 2008 they included XBRL. Their goal is to make the like data the like simplest and the more accessible. But as Jack said, even with the XBRL, there is no guideline of standardization. So there is tons of guidelines for everything, but standardization is something almost unique, because the main example is there is subsidiary, and some company count their like earning from their subsidiary and some don't. So even within analysts, there is discussion of what do we count as revenue and what we don't. Because do you count revenue from subsidiary, or like even there is SPACs, there is vehicle creation only for acquisition and merger, etc. So how do you count revenue within the acquiree and the acquirer? So it's a really complex, and this is why Jack said we have like manual analysis, because this is where even with the best system, we still need the human to understand the company behind.
That's a really good point, Antoine. Thank you for sharing that. So I have a question about that. When you talk about that's the SEC and that's US data, you guys do
Definitely.
data from all over the world, or is it only US stocks?
No, we started with only US, and then the process is almost the same. It is the like only difference is bon, since 2 years Europe has introduced XBRL, so we can use both. But for 20 years it was only PDF.
Okay.
But so we have to parse PDF, but the system is more the like same because it is the IFRS behind, so it is almost same. It is just like each country has its own reporting standards, but yeah.
Excellent. So the data, and as far as benefits for users, by all means.
Yeah, go ahead.
Antoine, you go for this.
Thank you.
Antoine has, I remember when I first came out, and I was like, holy, Antoine has a lot of data to offer. So,
Yeah, because basically what I think is we have to really understand that investing in the stock market, it's not only buying stocks, selling stock rapidly. It is more or less like, do you want to put your money in a company to found a company to make it grow? So you have to really understand what is the company. It's not only AAPL or like a stock or moving chart, right? So you have to know their financial, social sentiment. There, for example, there's something called beneficiary ownership. So who owns the company? Because at the end of the day, you would think like, hey, Tim Hook will take all decisions, but no, it is the board of director. So we have to understand who is controlling the company. So then we have the 13F. We have the insider trading, just because for me, if I don't know if management owns share, I don't know if they are physically implicating of the benefits of the company, right? So those are all like insider, etc. So those are all data for me that are crucial, because when you invest, you have to understand the full picture. So we have, so as I said, so we have 13F, insider, news, beneficial
IPO.
ownership. Yeah,
Say
exactly.
again.
Yeah, go
Should I say
ahead.
that again?
Sorry, we have like IPO,
Oh,
earnings
IPO. Okay.
certificates. Yeah. SG
Calendar.
13.
Exactly. Earning calendar, etc. Because we want to give to the user the tool to make the best investment. And we particularly us, we have like fundamental investor, because we started with like fundamental. So most of them are like long like investor, like hedge fund, etc. So yeah, so basically we add, and like even Senate, because even it's like interesting to like know if senator or like house like buy stocks, etc. To like just have a full picture of who is doing what. And then we recently introduced also economic indicator, because of course the Fed rate will impact stock market. So basically you can see finance like everything is correlated, everything. So this is why we try to give the most data possible so the user can make the best analysis at the end of the day.
I love that. That's fantastic. So you're saying, just to recap and help the audience understand, if somebody's interested in 13F filings, that's if somebody owns a X amount of stock, 20%, anything, I think it's over 5% they have to report, or
No,
over 10.
it's basically any fund in the US that have more than 100 million in asset management has to report each quarter all of those
Holy.
positions. It could be 1%, it could be 0,
Okay,
it could be
understood. Thank you.
0.5, but it is just that they like declare all their long holding every quarter.
And then
So
you
what
take all of that data and then help users know X amount of funds, know own this stock or own that stock or whatever it is.
exactly. Exactly, because basically from that you basically know all the fund what they do. So most of the like user will look at them, because when you see, for example, Berkshire who's own like maybe 55 stocks, so each pick it's not random, like
Right.
they pick a stock because of time frame. So we just anyone that wants to analyze 13F, he will call on like endpoint and know. So for example, there is a new stock in Berkshire, that buy for X amount, or they like sold Apple recently for this. So, you know, so it is really a good indicator of who holds what.
I love that. So basically, if somebody, I had a real estate analogy somebody gave me a while ago, said if you're looking to buy a house in a new neighborhood, you don't have to do the research on all the population, the demographics, all that stuff. Just find out where the stores are opening up. They already did that research, and then go buy a, you know, if Home Depot and all these big stores are opening up in this new area, then it's going to be a good area to buy a house in. So that's kind of the same concept there. Wonderful. Sorry, go ahead.
I remember when Antoine first mentioned the 13F filings, because this was a 3-year project. Oh, I think we had like 4 or 5 people rotate and work on it. 13Fs, the amount of calculation that is in there, some filings have, some assets have well over like a few thousand holdings. We calculate for every stock and every holding that they have, the movement, whether it's been dropped, whether it's been added, how long they hold it for, what's the average, how long do they average hold the stock, what's the performance against an S&P, like all those analytics are provided. And yeah, the difficulty part there is that it takes a significant amount of computing power to do something like that. The earlier conversation we had about data and data quality, 13Fs, what's interesting about them is that prior to 2018, they're not standardized any way whatsoever.
Wow.
And so extraction there is extremely, extremely difficult. But on top of that, you would assume that people who file for 13Fs would be correct. And it's a filing to the SEC. The number of SEC filings, I would say it's about 2 to 3% are actually filed incorrectly. So a few blatant errors are like when market value and the number of shares are exactly the same. I've seen one where it's like Boeing Airlines, and then it's the wrong ISIN or QSIP. And there's just a blatant number of filings that are inherently wrong. And so when we get those anomalies and we go and look at the filing, we find out that it's not our system that's wrong, it's the actual filing. And how do you correct that? So
yeah. And that's a really good point, because actually this, like, people would think like cleaning data, it is mostly aggregating, but it is sometimes correcting the like issue from the filler. Because as you said, so for example, they normally be multiplied by like 1,000, but some of them just report without multiplying. So you have to have like some system in place to like see, does the market cap make sense? So for example, Apple market cap cannot be like few like 100 million. It has to be trillion. So we have all these things, and like same for like 10K and 10Q, because they like restate their like data. So in 1 year they can restate a value, etc. So all of those issue comes sometimes from the filing. So that's a really big job, but it's been years that we're doing so. So that's
no, I love that. And then you've got the senators buying and selling and all the data. So let's talk about the actual end user. Do you find most of your clients are individual investors, or would you say professional investors?
There's, I would say there's a large mix. When people usually say, who's your target client base? We'll say everyone. And it's actually interesting because we actually do have everyone. We range from professional sports teams to governments, to banks, to universities, to just your normal Joe who runs a small business shop. We've even had startups and big entities and pharmaceuticals who just want market research to see how the sector is performing. But really, it's any and everyone. We do also make it easy that you can access the data even without knowing any programming. So we do have a playground, so you can get the data that you need. I recently heard from a colleague that they were doing similar things and trying to get financial data, but what they were doing is literally copying or downloading every single file from another provider or source that they saw. And so we came up with that idea is to also make it available for end users who may not have coding, but we do have, I would say, about 30%, 40% are large enterprises, and the remainders are, I would say 20% is developers, or they're trying to build a financial app, a startup, and the remaining guys are either trying to build their own portfolio and try to do some analysis there. So really a wide range of everyone.
I love that. And then next question, gentlemen, from I like using lists and keeping things simple. and pros and cons. So you guys are data specialists, experts. You know, I'm lucky if I can tie my shoes when it comes to any of that stuff that you do, but I mean, hats off to you again. What are some mistakes that you see people make when they use data, and how do you avoid them?
Alors, so first of all, there is the first mistake. So when they, so the first one is to not understand what is fiscal year. So those are more accounting issues. So for example, some of them has big issue to like understand what is a fiscal year and calendar year. So for example, Apple close in September.
Right.
But some of them things like all company close in December, which is not right. The case, right? So all of those are, we would say, are not intentional error because it's something accounting. So we have to do a lot of, how do you say, a lot of explanation of how does the market work, etc. Because usually company has a technical department and a product owner and etc. And the two are not usually best at finance. So those are kind of things that comes a lot, like non-GAAP and GAAP, as you said before, like for the like EPS, this comes always the fiscal year. And then there is more technical issue. So for example, using an API key, sometimes it can be complex, like the way to structure like an like URL, how to understand like, because we have as reported, so which each field is not standardized. So you have to loop and look at value separately. We have standardized one, and then we have bulk. So when you download, for example, like 1,000 company in one API call, so then it's also another process. So there is kind of different issue.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, I would just classify. I would say like our customer support team who works endlessly, I would say 90% of the emails and information that they receive are just because they don't have the financial literacy. I think a lot of people assume financial data to be this clean downloaded data set that everything aligns and everything works the way that it should be, but it's not. We've seen some ridiculous things happen. And for example, we had one company that had a negative tax rate, and it's like 100% completely valid. But we had a few other things that look like anomalies, but they're not actually anomalies. It's just because the company is just really weird and they had a restructure or something happened. And so I'd say 90% of it is just education, to say, like educating them about the financial that they're looking at, because a lot of developers, I think, people, they'll start pulling the information and then they'll like, oh, that's a cool endpoint, let me start pulling that, without fully knowing what they're looking at. And then they're like, oh, this doesn't make any sense. And then if you actually go to the raw filing or actually get an explanation, they'll understand why it is the way it is. So financial data world, this financial data world, the data is not clean. It's everyone wants this perfect set of information. It's not there, unfortunately. For your top 500, yes. For everything else that's in the market, there's a lot of things that goes on. Companies can be rewired and reshaped in so many different ways.
Question, how do you get a negative tax?
Yeah.
And so, how do I get that?
Yeah, so that got flagged because we were working on their DCF calculator, and then that broke the model, and so we had to go and investigate. There was a few of them, but it turns out I think they had a huge large tax credit. They had a significant tax credit. So yeah, the taxable amount was negative. So they got money back instead of it deducting from, and that's what caused the negative. But that's what you needed in order to get their internal tax rate. So the whole DCF just blew apart because it doesn't make any sense.
Right, right.
Yeah, because you need tax rate to calculate.
I love
that. Yeah, those are just some examples.
Thank you for that. So that's one side of the equation, the mistakes. How about the other side, the good things people do, or the lessons, or you know, ways to use it? How savvy investors use your data, or just use data in general?
So that's pretty amazing, because we saw actually almost everything. The most impressive one that I saw was a really smart way of using data. So for example, some of them, so for example, are like in bio industry, biochemical, and they are actually using our data to screen any competitors and look, so basically create benchmark of where should they go, what do they do. So basically they mostly look at for example, what is the margin of your general and administrative expense? What is your margin of marketing? Your margin, everything, so they can see if someone is like expanding, because if someone start to like spend a lot in marketing general, etc., means that they are really expanding. So they compare and they have like this benchmark of their really niche industry to make sure that they align with their competitors, and if they see something, they will jump and increase.
Got it. Like, that's not from a trading standpoint, but from a corporate standpoint.
Exactly, for like corporate standpoint.
Understood. How about from a trading standpoint?
Some cool stuff that I saw was like a really complex algorithm using AI to basically, what they do is they extract like all technical indicators and they create like these almost zoom in within the chart and spot like issues. So for example, if they see an acceleration in the like small run, they can expect like within like few hours like something's going to go up or down, and this is really interesting. So they are just ingesting so much data. Like for example, we had like a client like recently that was ingesting so much data that we jump on a call with him to like explain how to manage all those data, because for example, especially for like real-time quote and intraday, there is so much data that they have like incredible complex algorithm to like predict, huh? Because what they want is it's predict that that we have to explain how to ingest the like data to not break our server.
Gotcha. Jack, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think the only thing I would say add to that is like Antoine mentioned intraday. It is at the forefront. FMP is a data company, and understanding how to scale a data company effectively, cost is our biggest issue. Just to give you an idea, intraday we have minutely prices for like Apple back to the 1980s, and just that one symbol, that's about 30 or 40 gigabytes worth of data just for the 1 minute record. Mm-hmm. And you scale that to 100,000 equities for currencies and everything else. You have to maintain an architecture where people can pull different points in time without it breaking. That's why if you go online, if you look for intraday or any 1 minute records, you won't go back more than a month, because the servers just can't handle.
Yeah.
So when people ask, it's like, where's this data from this time to this time? And it could have been a blip that we haven't received it, or it's a symbol that we haven't supported, but no one has that information, just because it's almost impossible to store.
Got it. No, that makes good sense.
And maybe a use case really interesting is a lot of our users create website. So they have like those incredible websites where they like display data and allow users to use their website to like analyze the company, etc. And sometimes it's pretty amazing. Me, I saw a lot of them, they have like designers, etc. And it's really nice to see how like creative can someone be with the like data. So how beautiful they can create website and make it like user friendly, etc. And we always get like some testing key, so we can enter like testing email and see the data, how it display. And it's kind of amazing, like how like each one has a different view of how to present data and how to make it the most effective for the like end user.
I love that. It's almost like an artist, how an artist can go out there. I 100% can relate to that. Wonderful. So gentlemen, I guess in closing here, people can learn more by going to financialmodelingprep.com. And any final thoughts or any questions I didn't ask that you guys would like to share with the audience before we wrap up?
I don't have anything besides that the financial data world is insane. There's a lot you can do with it. Obviously, the goal is to make money, but just understanding, once you look at all the data that's out there, and you kind of get a better sense of how this world works and how the world runs, and it kind of opens your eyes to some of the things that's happening. It's an exciting world. There's a lot to learn. There's a never endless journey of possibilities. But it is confusing, it is complex, and some days you just might not get a lot of sleep. So that's all I can say in closing.
Yeah, Mia, I would say that since I started finance, I really got passionate about it, and I really recommend everyone to take the time to just like learn more about finance, because that's something that you will need at some point, either from the stock market or from personal finance. And it becomes more and more easy. And basically, our goal is to make your work easy. So if you want to create a website, have an analyst, or just like look at your portfolio, you can easily come create an API. You can just play with the like data, and we recommend that start soon. Because it takes time to like learn and grow, but we're here to first help and make everything the more simplest for you, so you can create like amazing application.
I love it. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for taking the time. Hopefully, we'll have you on again soon. Data's not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. So I'd love
No
to
way.
pick up the conversation again in future quarters and hopefully have you guys on several times because
Of course.
I can go for another 2 hours. I know the audience is probably like, hey, enough, but I have so many more questions I'd like to ask you guys. But hopefully, we'll do it again. And thank you
Awesome.
kindly.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.